All right, we got a few folks joining us here. Let's see, Margaret, Robin, welcome. Good to see you both. And Austin's here. Hello, Austin.
Let's party. Are you all ready to party?
Yes, Jim is joining us as well. Hello, Jim. Welcome.
Good
And
afternoon.
Austin, hey, good afternoon.
Let me get my video going here.
All right.
Don't mean to frighten you, but here I come.
I know. Isn't it weird? The
There we go.
pandemic changed everything. We went from, everyone being audio only to suddenly we had to see each other. And I remember the first couple of times that people started doing that, I thought, well, I'm not camera ready. What is this? I had to get camera ready quick.
I was at this, I guess it was an online event yesterday or the day before. And it was by Airmeet, and they were like, well, if you want to ask a question, we'll invite you to the stage, and you would come on video. And I'm like, no, that's okay. I didn't dress appropriately to be on stage, so. And the hosts looked wonderful, so it was kind of embarrassing, so I just stayed in the background.
Well, this will be a very intimate group here, and we're all going to be friends by the end. So, you guys are free to share video. If you don't feel like it that day, that's fine too. I think it makes it a little bit more intimate, but I also agree that I understand if, hey, you know what? I'm a little zoomed out today. I've been on video calls all day, so we'll leave that up to you. I think we got most of you here. One, two, three. Maybe a couple more folks that are going to be joining us. Patricia joined us, David, Marina.
Funny, I
Great. Okay.
recognize some of you by your name and by your LinkedIn profile photos. I'm like, oh, I've seen them on LinkedIn. I've just never seen them in real life. You
There
know?
you go. Good stuff. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. I got the recording going already. And by the way, that's just a reminder. If you came, I strongly encourage everyone to be here for each of our calls. But if you come in late or you have to leave early for whatever reason, just know we're going to be posting the replay within about 24 hours. Okay. So, you're going to get a chance to catch that, and you have lifetime access to those recordings, just as you do for all the materials. So be aware of that. All right. So Austin, I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend. You're
Sure.
like our leader here.
Well, this train is going to go off the rails very quickly then, right? If I'm the conductor.
Well, I'll
So
keep you on track.
keep me on track. So the way we normally handle this is I hope you all have brought questions. Any question you have will probably be relevant to someone else. And so what we typically do is just take questions in the order they come. And so if while we're talking to someone else, answering someone else's questions, just put Q colon, write your question in the chat. It's actually a little bit easier for us later too, because then we have kind of a log of those questions in the chat. And we just get a sense later, oh, do we need to create new material to make the course more valuable? So we also just like to have a record of questions for that reason. So, without further ado, who wants to crack the seal on this chat and ask us just an incredibly difficult and challenging question that's going to
One thing I
stretch
should
us?
mention, Austin, is when you put a, in the chat, Q colon, and then you just give us a sentence or two. You don't have to give us all the background because we'll unmute you and then we can have a conversation. Okay. So just a point of clarification.
That is a good point. So I would love to hear from you. Otherwise, I'll just tell bad jokes. And I don't think any of you, that's not what you signed up for, honestly. Maybe it
Yeah.
is. Maybe it is.
No. I definitely didn't sign up for that.
Yeah, Ed's like, no, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go get another coffee. All right. So Marina, nice to see you, Marina. I have an aunt named Marina. What a cool name. Okay. Paid discovery seems the only one where you're not doing additional strategy work on your own, but rather regurgitating the discussion in an organized way. Correct? I would say kind of, because different engagements and different clients may require a little bit of work on your own. Sometimes you're going to do most everything together during the session. So I'll just give you a couple of quick examples. And if that covers you, Marina, great. If not, you can just ask follow-up questions. So for example, let's say you were going to do content strategy, and what you were going to come into the workshop with is like insights into the content they've already got that's working. Maybe you dig into some social analytics. Maybe you dig into web analytics, and you're coming in saying, hey, historically, these have been your best performing pieces of content. Oh, and also I did some poking around, looked at what your closest competitors are doing. Here are some topics that have done really well for them. So like, absolutely, the time you have with a client could be richer if you do a little bit of research or planning beforehand and come in with insights ready to share. That being said, probably 90% of my strategy sessions are sort of this like shared experience of discovery, where the preparation I do is with structuring our time together based on their needs or based on how they respond to like an initial questionnaire. But for the most part, I'm not doing a ton of prep beforehand. I'm there more as a facilitator, and it kind of takes all the pressure off, right? I'm not showing up and like trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat and be some kind of genius and be like, hey, look at all these amazing ideas I have for you. I'm like, oh no, you know, if there's a rabbit to be pulled out of a hat, you're kind of the rabbit, you know, and I'm just going to pull great ideas, or you're the hat, and then I'm going to pull rabbits out of you. That's a horrible image, but you get what I'm saying. Right? Like, I believe that most business leaders and marketing directors already have the answers to their questions. Almost like they already have great ideas, but there are all these blockers, and you create space and you use the right questions to sort of gently remove some of those obstacles. And sure enough, good ideas come out. So that's idea number one. You know, idea number two is, again, kind of what I described before. It's a hybrid. And I'm really glad we started with this question, Marina, because if you all walk away from this cohort and this course with no other insight, this is the one I would leave you with. Like, you can take these core ideas and literally do anything you want with them, right? So if you love the research, why not add a research component, right? If you really enjoy the process of doing some copywriting or some other form of writing with clients kind of on the spot, do that. You can, I say hybrid because it can be a mix of prep and sort of in the moment, but like kind of everything is on the table. So don't feel like any of the ideas we give you are rigid and that they can only be successful in the way that I have done them or in the way that Ed and I have presented them. Does that make sense? Great. Okay.
I didn't know I could speak. Thank you for letting me. Yes, that makes sense. That's helpful. Thank you.
Cool. And if other stuff comes up, obviously drop it into the chat. Okay. Jane, do you give feedback on our strategy offers and templates? Do we email it to you? Typically, we just save any kind of critique for these sessions. Ed, do you want to chime in on that? He's going to unmute himself.
I forgot that I was muted. What we would ask is that, yes, bring it to the call. and we could do a critique right there and then. And that's great because everyone gets to learn from that, and then others will bring theirs as well. So happy to do that. That is the way we would ask you to, you know, to bring them in.
And I will also say that if you all kind of want to workshop each other's offers, by all means, like, drop the best email address for you in the chat, and, you know, pair up, right? Because sometimes it just helps to have another set of eyes. I think that's what you're talking about, Jane. It's like, hey, could I get another set of eyes on this? You know?
Yeah. You know, okay. I think I'm doing it right, but there's that fear that it's not right and people are going to, like, are you out of your mind? I'm not paying you for this.
And here's the thing. If that happened, you would receive that and you're like, okay, it's not resonating, right? I've put offers out and they just fell with a thud. And after I got over the initial embarrassment, I'm like, okay, what does the next iteration look like? Mm-hmm. Right. So ultimately our job is to make our clients' lives easier. And if we put an offer out that isn't, like, instantly attractive, then we still have some work to do. Okay. Robin, most people think SaaS stands for software as a service. How do you differentiate yourself if using this acronym? You mean strategy as a service? I would just say spell it out instead of using the acronym. I think that's the easiest way. Just say, hey, I'm now offering strategy as a service, and avoid confusion. Because you bring up a good point, right? If you were to abbreviate it and use SaaS, like 99% of people would misunderstand you. So that's right, one thing. Yeah.
I've seen it that way. It's SaaS, but it didn't mean software as a service, but that's where my mind went. Because gotcha. I do a lot of technical writing.
You know, Austin, but I'm glad this came up too, because you and I have had a lot of discussions about, in a way, we need to get people going through this program to stop calling it strategy out there, like, to their prospects and clients. Not all the time, but it's like a mental block. It's like, if I say strategy, people aren't going to want to pay for that, mm-hmm. or they get confused. Sometimes it's best, Robin, to just not even say, hey, I'm starting to offer strategy as a mm-hmm. service. Sometimes it's just best to say, I'm starting to help clients with the brainstorming or with the planning or ideation part of X, mm-hmm. right? So talk in their terms, explain mm-hmm. it in a way that would make sense to them, and maybe don't even use the word strategy in those mm-hmm. discussions.
Yeah, I find if I say discovery or discovery, that usually works better. But then depending on the audience, because with the Speakers Association, I was able to say a strategy session to brainstorm your ideas for books and speeches. And I actually got people to hire me for that. So
there you awesome. Go. You have to read the audience.
Right.
Yeah, well, but don't, the point is, don't think, okay, I'm going to slap this category name on my website mm-hmm. and that's going to do the heavy lifting. No, yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Right. So I was looking for some kind of title to put on the website, because I have, you know, technical writing and I have some other category. And then I was looking to add the third one, but strategy as a service, I'm not sure if that would work. Unless I just wrote it all out.
I think you could just call it strategy. You don't have to say as a service.
Just strategy sessions.
Strategy sessions. I will say that when I started doing this in early 2016, it was about this time in 2016. I don't even know that I was regularly using the word strategy in anything I sold. I called it project road mapping. And then I started doing what I called content road mapping, where when I was working with clients who wanted to do thought leadership writing mm-hmm. on LinkedIn or wherever, Medium, sometimes blogging, you know, it wasn't even content strategy. I called it content road mapping. So again, I would pay attention if that word strategy, if you put that word out in front of a potential client and that trips them up, take that word back quickly and then use a different word, you know, because I think our clients will almost always tell us exactly what they want to buy from us and how they want us to sell it to them if we listen carefully. So always sell to people using their language, not yours. And even mm-hmm. now, I won't sell strategy. I'm like, oh, you need a thought partner. I had one client who's like, I just need a thought partner. I need someone who can just sort of to bounce ideas off of, right? I'm like, great. Here's my thought partnership package. Another client, he really wanted a sounding board. And he has been a client since 2016, since I started offering this kind of stuff. And to this day, in his invoices, it is monthly sounding board session. It is not strategy. Okay. David, I feel like most of my clients haven't asked me for strategy ever. Mostly very large companies or agencies who seem to have a clear idea what they're doing. I'm in the role of a very well-paid order taker, like Ed described. Is there any opportunity here, or do I need to think my target market? So, you know, David, you are typically like a subcontractor for larger companies and agencies. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yes, that's correct.
And so you're like, oh, they already seem to have that strategy function covered, and then they just want me to execute on the plan?
On the writing, yeah. It's almost always articles, blogs, like they almost just have 90% of it figured out, and then they just hire me because of my specialized knowledge in finance.
Mm-hmm. So I would say short answer to your question is yes. If you're kind of getting the lay of the land and you don't actually see convenient opportunities to sell this sort mm-hmm. of convenient intervention points, then you might like kind of look lateral and say, well, where else might it be easier to sell? This has come up in the past. I have found it easier to sell this type of engagement to smaller companies, solopreneurs, consultants. And when it is larger companies, I often won't call it strategy because they're like, oh no, we've got our strategy dialed in. Ed, should we show them the diagram, the interventions diagram?
Yeah, I was just going to say, and we have it in session one, David. I don't know if you saw that one.
Because I remember seeing that. Yeah.
I'll bring this up so you can see it visually, but you mentioned something a minute ago that struck me as a potential opportunity, even with the types of clients you're working with. If you have specialized knowledge and experience in a specific industry or domain or topic area, that is an opportunity for the intervention entry point. Meaning like, David, here's what we need and here's why. Can you write it for it? That's usually what they're asking, right? And usually what we go is with our clipboard, sure, let me take that order. And you can make a lot of money doing that. But what we're asking you to do is to listen critically to what they just asked for. Think more critically about it. And if you feel that something is off, ask deeper follow-up questions about it just to qualify it. Because many times what you will find because of your knowledge, your experience mm-hmm. in a domain is, you know, I don't think that is the right intervention, or I don't think that is the right way of addressing this topic or concern or issue. And that gives you an opportunity to start some dialogue rather than taking mm-hmm. going straight to your clipboard. It's like, hey, that's great. Let me ask you a couple of questions about that.
Okay.
And that is where the opportunity might be. So I wouldn't automatically discount this market that you're in right now. It's just that might be the entry point for you because they're problem and solution aware.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, because sometimes I'm so excited to make the sale, so I'm just focused on like the deadline, the price, and let's get moving. Whereas like asking those questions you recommended, you know, builds a deeper relationship.
Yeah, well, and it's okay. Some may not go for it, and it's, I'm not saying this is foolproof.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, like, I grew up in the South, and it's true that Southerners are sometimes like polite to a fault and don't always say what they're thinking, right? So I think in those moments when I do kind of feel uneasy, or there's like a sense of discord because the client is saying, all right, I'm ready for you to take down my order, and I actually see flaws in it, it's actually helped me to just follow up over email and say, I spent some time thinking about what you said, and I would like to share my point of view based on having written dozens of articles in this space or dozens of posts or whatever. I think we could find a fresher angle or whatever. Like, you can, like, each of us is different, and our ability to basically push back in the moment or disagree or say, hey, are you open to another viewpoint? Like, you don't have to be combative in the moment to like sell strategy, mm-hmm. right? You can listen well, take down the order in the moment, then follow up over email and say, I've spent a bunch of time thinking about this. I'd like to share some other ideas with you. And it's that simple. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out, right? Because sometimes the idea of they're telling you, here's what we want, and then you pushing back and saying, I think you should want this other thing instead, or I don't think you know what you want, that makes some of us uncomfortable, myself included. Like, you don't know what you want. I'm going to get in your face. Anyway, Ed?
Yeah, so real quick, each of these bubbles is a potential entry point for you. And this is, by the way, happening today to everybody, because some of you are asking, I don't know, how should I present this to my clients? I think the biggest opportunity is to have the conversations you're already having, but ask different questions, not just logistical questions. We're used to asking, okay, well, how many words, and what's the angle, and how many subject matter experts do I need? Like, we're asking these logistical questions, which are important, but I think now you're going to have to develop a different skill of question asking. So we have clients that are problem aware only, and clients that are problem and solution aware. I'll just go through this really quick. Here are the less savvy clients in most cases from a marketing standpoint. They know they have a problem, but they're unaware of the root cause. That is a great entry point for offering some strategy. And again, we don't have to call it strategy. They know the problem's root cause, but they haven't come up with the right solution or intervention to deal with it. Okay, another great entry point. All right, they know what the problem is, and they think they know what they need to do about it. So they've identified an intervention. And the question here is, from your experience and perspective, does that sound like a sound intervention or an unsound intervention? If it's sound, you know, maybe we're good. But then the next thing we need to ask is, how are you thinking about approaching it? You know, because sometimes they have the right idea, but the execution that they're planning on is flawed. There's something wrong with it. So if it's flawed, that's another entry point. And sometimes they got the right solution, the right approach, but they're coming to you and saying, you know, we could really use some help here. We're going to have a lot of cooks in the kitchen. We need some project chiefing, some shepherding. We need a sounding board. We need a referee. This does happen, and this mm-hmm. is going to happen more with clients where there's already trust, not a new prospect. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in each of these scenarios, they're already happening. We're just not aware of them. And I think you guys' biggest opportunities will be to pay closer attention to what you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then look for these entry points. If you want to print this, create your own, keep it front and center until it becomes second nature. These are easy. These right here to the left are the easiest. Once we start moving to the right, it becomes more nuanced. because now they have a solution. They're coming to us with that. But like in David's case, something's off. And rather than just pressing on and not asking to validate it, ask some questions to validate their thinking. Ask some questions to validate how they're looking to approach the project. Okay. Ask them, even over here to the very right, ask them, you know, what could go wrong here? What obstacles could get in their way? And see if maybe they start talking in a Socratic way. You could start asking about what could get in the way. And then you can point to that. Well, you mentioned this, you're concerned about that. Would you like some help in, you know, having a referee come in and making sure that we're all, you know, staying civil? I don't know. Anyway.
I think that's, I mean, Ed and I obviously created this because I think we do need a paradigm shift, because I really did just think of myself as an order taker for the longest time. But yet I would have this uneasiness when I was listening to a client propose a course of action that I was like, well, I know I'm just like the lowly freelancer here, but your plan sucks, you know, like, and I don't necessarily feel like I have the authority or perceived expertise here to basically to interject and say, I know you all think that you want to build the website that way, but like, I just, or even like a great example is SEO. I'd have clients tell me their plan and I'm like, that's not how SEO works anymore. You can't just like stuff keywords into content and then Google reward you for that. That's maybe 15 years ago, right? So Ed mentioned this, and I would just underscore this. If you're not already showing up to like that initial get to know you or discovery call with clients, very keenly or astutely listening, doing that active listening, this may be kind of new territory for you, and that's okay. And none of this has to be combative. You're just only asking questions, right? You don't have to disagree. You're like, well, how did you arrive at that conclusion? You know, that kind of thing. Cool. So obviously this is available. If you all ever have any other questions about that diagram, let me know, let Ed know. I wish I had it in 2016 when I first got started, because I could have made a lot more money selling strategy. There are opportunities everywhere once you start to notice them. Have you ever gotten a new car and then you suddenly see your car everywhere on the road? That's what happens with strategy. Once you start looking for opportunities to sell it, you're like, oh, there's one there, and there's one there, and there's one there, and I really like that red one. Ooh, look at those rims, you know? Okay, so Marina, I was working on a juicy offer for a messaging strategy session. I was struggling with defining the cutoff for the strategy session and how the post-session report differs from a deliverable like a messaging doc. Thoughts on how to define the cutoff for what to offer as part of the strategy fee? So Marina, kind of going back to your first question, you could make the messaging doc the deliverable. So like, don't get hung up with that word report, right? So some of these like strategy sessions could seamlessly blend into you now having the insights you need to work solo on one or more deliverables that the client needs, right? So it doesn't have to be a pure report in the sense of like, here's what we discussed, here are insights that came up, right? It could be, here's what we discussed, here are insights that came up, here is your new messaging strategy, you know, and here are some ways that you could deploy that messaging as copy on your new website, right? So
and charge accordingly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I was for the homework session one, I was looking at past work that I've done, and I saw that in like 2019, I did a whole all day, but it's basically a whole day strategy session Right. That's if I guess, and then all the resultant report writing, deliverable writing, and I charge by writing rate. So I'm like,
Yep. You're already doing this stuff. We already do this stuff. We have to. Like, writing is often sort of the very, it's like the very last stone, the apex of the pyramid. We're like, great, I've built up all the insight I need. And now, ding, we put on that little capstone, right? Yeah. Well, I think I mixed metaphors. The capstone would not be a pyramid. It would be an arch. But anyway, you get what I'm saying, where that was my big light bulb moment. I had always brought clarity to my clients. Like, I had always helped them find the path forward, in part because I'm like, I need to, I've got a price tag and I need to pin it to something. And you don't, you're not even clear on what the project is yet. And so, well, crap, I've got to do these marathon discovery sessions to get me and you too to a place where I even have a project to quote. And then after a while, I just got fed up with that. I'm like, or I could charge for that, right? So yeah, you're going to have some engagements that are pure strategy, which result in like a pure report. And maybe you part ways. You're like, great, I help you get some clarity, help you put together a plan. Fantastic. Your internal team is going to take that and run with it. But a lot more of mine are strategy that kind of blends into some implementation work or some deliverables. And then one thing leads to another. And I love that. I love it because strategy engagements strengthen your positioning. They make it easier for you to charge a premium for the writing work, right? It just is the most natural thing in the world. If they pay a premium for some form of strategy, planning, brainstorming, ideation, project roadmapping here, if they pay a premium for that, well, then you're not going to be this cheap dime a dozen writer on the other side of that, right? So it really helps, you know, just sort of cement your positioning. Okay, Marina, you good?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. You are good. You're already out there doing it. You are good. Okay. Patricia, I've sold strategy sessions, but I've also included a quarterly content calendar. In your world, the calendar would be an add-on or next step. This is actually very similar to what we just talked about with Marina, in that absolutely you can have an engagement that is strategy focused that results in something like a messaging playbook, something like a content calendar, something like in my case, brand strategy. The whole point of that is to result in a brand book. So it's always strategy plus deliverable, right? But I would also say, like, you know, if and when you can, you have the opportunity to quite literally just share your mind, share your head with people and charge for that, do. Anytime someone says, hey, I'd love to pick your brain, they are asking for a thought partner, a brainstorming partner, right? I have a profile on Clarity FM. If you go to Clarity FM and you just type in my name, my profile will come up. I've done dozens of calls where all I did was sit there and listen and give people ideas. It's a huge paradigm shift, but like, we're already really good at coming up with valuable ideas. We just don't always charge for them. So Patricia, you good?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Marina, can you talk about how to define slash create your value ladder and give some examples of how each step feeds into the next from the end of session one? Sure. So let's say I want to sell some sort of like brainstorming or like a clarity session or ideation. And then out of that, might come like, hey, we actually need to do a bigger brand strategy engagement. And then out of that engagement comes a brand book. But then they realize, oh, this was really, really helpful. We still don't have anybody to kind of own this internally. could we do some sort of strategy subscription? Right. So I have this one client, they're called Canvas, shopcanvas.co. That's exactly how it unfolded. One sort of road mapping session led to a proposal for a big brand strategy engagement, led to a strategy subscription. And I bet that client, not bet, I know that client has represented over $100,000 for me over the past, I don't know, 2.5, 3 years. So yeah, kind of just cements that idea of strategy positioning you as not just sort of the order taker, but like a key advisor as well. Another one might be, another example of the value ladder might be, you know, they get in touch, they're asking for some writing, and you say, well, hold on, let's back up. Have you taken the time to just capture your best ideas, right? So you might start just with brainstorming, and then that might become a content roadmap. And then the content roadmap might become some sort of content or writing retainer or subscription where you're responsible for however many posts or whatever each month, right? And then even that function could grow over time if they're like, oh, like I've been in this case where they're like, could you actually like recruit some other writers to make content for us too, right? You don't necessarily have to kind of take on that editor-in-chief or that project manager or content manager role if you don't want to, but that will just get your creative juices flowing around. What can the value ladder be, you know? And I think it ultimately comes back to like Marina, like what kind of work would you really love to be doing 3 years from now? What kind of work doesn't feel as much like work to you? It feels closer to play. And how do you sort of bend the trajectory of your business to do that work? You know, hopefully it's also work that can pay you really, really well. You know, so that I would be thinking about where you'd like to end up 3 years from now and be thinking about how you're working on creating the value ladder that can ultimately get you there. Most of my work now, writing is almost secondary. Most of it is just thinking and strategy and planning and moving big projects forward. And then I just do all the writing for myself. I'm working on a book. So I do more writing than ever, but less writing for my clients than ever, if that makes sense. It's been really nice to actually be pretty selfish with my writing over the last 2-3 years. Okay.
Hey, Austin, yes. I want to make sure that we get to everybody. And I know Marina has some other questions in here. Could we come back to, she's got another question, but could we come go to Jim and Jane and then we can come back to Marina?
Cool. We have not forgotten you, Marina. Keep those questions coming. Okay. So Jim, how do you approach the situation when a client doesn't measure success? For example, they would like to increase click-throughs, but don't yet have a baseline. So you mean if you're trying to quantify the value of a strategy engagement? So that's a great question.
Yes, that's what I was after, Austin. Thank you.
In my experience with that Juicy Offers framework, the quantifying value piece is the hardest piece for us, right? So keep in mind though, that a lot of the emotional benefits are even more valuable than something like ROI, right? So to use your example, if they haven't like benchmarked click-through rates yet, then you say, let's start. You know, and that would be an opportunity for you to say, oh, and what we'll do is we'll have a monthly or a quarterly strategy check-in where we then look at click-through rates, right? Again, you will notice opportunities to sell this. Oh, they haven't benchmarked it? Why not? That's crazy. They should be measuring this stuff. And when are they going to look at their numbers? I might as well sell them their space in their calendar to actually have a meaningful discussion around this, right? So other ways to think about value, confidence, their best ideas, speed, like they're not just getting it done on their own. They need help to get it. Clarity, that is the single biggest thing that I sell. Because out of clarity comes confidence. A lot of people, they can't make decisions because they don't have confidence, and they don't have confidence because they don't have clarity. But if we get you clarity, confidence will come from that. You're like, yes, that is the problem. That is the root cause. Okay, now let's evaluate the paths forward, and then let's come up with an actionable plan, right? So no, you know, it's like, hey, you spent $1 and you made $5. Most of us aren't going to quantify value that way. It's going to be stuff that is a little bit squishier, like clarity. I think it's in the first week where we're session one, where we talk about what the clients get when they buy strategy.
Yeah.
Go back, write all those words down, and you can sprinkle almost all of those into the value section.
Okay. So you might in your report say something like, you know, you'll gain greater clarity and, you know, control over your goals. If we start, for instance, a measurement program for, you know, your email or whatever the case may be,
that could be.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's make meaningful incremental improvements. Let's get smarter over time. Let's turn your marketing team into a disciplined team that uses data to drive decisions. There are a bunch of different, we're writers. We know how to fluff things up, right? No. But you get what I'm saying. Like we don't need to be solely focused on financial metrics. Okay. Jane, what to do with a client that has hired an SEO company and keyword stuffing is what they do? First of all, Jane, I'm sorry that you're in this position.
they hired me because they wanted a copywriter, but they had already hired the SEO company as an agency to do SEO stuff, blog posts that I swear are written by a computer or somebody with some serious SEO, English as a second language issue, and emails. And then they tried to sell them an additional blog, and they were like, we want to give you that extra money and have you write something because we like your writing. So they like me, but I'm SEO certified, and I'm going around with this company. It's like, well, we've done it this way successfully for the last 10 years. And I'm going, but I think Google has changed how this works. Just a bit.
So the one thing that comes to mind, right, is like until they actually change what they believe about SEO best practices, you're probably still going to butt heads.
Yeah.
Right. So two-step approach. One, go come up with a one-page cheat sheet of SEO best practices. Okay. This will be a tool that you can use with all of your clients. Mm-hmm. Share that with this client and say, hey, and like cite your sources, whether it's Moz, whether it's Ahrefs, whether it's Google themselves, like here are my sources. These are the like go-to authorities. Here's, you know, SEM Rush, like these are the authorities. Here's what they're finding. That's why I sort of espouse or advocate for these best practices. These are most recent based on Google's most recent changes to weighting ranking factors, algorithm, all that. And then say, like, I'd like to follow these best practices because these are most up to date. Do you disagree? And if they disagree and they're like, we still want to do it this other way, then at that point, your conscience is clear. You can take the money And you can just do your best to make the client happy under the circumstances that they have dictated. Right.
Right.
So, and,
yeah,
I think it's your integrity that is saying, like I can't in good conscience write your content in a way that I actually think Google is going to penalize you for. I know better. I'm SEO certified. Right. So, but you have to write them down. You have to provide like documentation and original authoritative sources and say, here's what I want to do. Do you disagree? And if they disagree, great.
Well, my back pocket strategy is one of the things for best SEO practice is freshness. So all of these pages are going to have to be rewritten in the next year anyway to keep them fresh. So I'm going to go in and delete keywords.
There you go.
That's my
refreshed everything, meaning I've retroactively followed best practices. Thank you very much.
Right, right. But they hired me originally to write, and then they made me marketing manager because I was doing strategy.
I call that the curse of competence.
Yes. So I do get, I'm on a retainer. It's a monthly retainer, but I'd like more strategy, less writing, and dealing with incompetent writers.
Well, I, two things, and then we can, I know we've got some more questions. One, I've said to clients straight up, are you going to do this with or without me? This way. Are you going to do this way with or without me? And when they say yes, I'm like, okay, I'll be your guy or I'll be your gal. I will do it. I'll take your money, but then I'll try to make this funny. But I'm like, but I just needed like a historical record that showed I did not think this was the best course of action. I think that's leadership.
Okay.
And I think that's high integrity leadership. So as long as you sort of express dissent in a respectful but unmistakable way, and you kind of have an email record of that.
Right.
Absolutely. Then you can fall in line, take their money.
Okay. You know? Okay.
Some clients, you have to let them, it sounds terrible, but they have to fall on their faces before they're like, you know what? Maybe we should listen to you next time. And I've had clients come back and say, you were right. You know, lead us, O wise and respected ruler, or whatever it is. But anyway, okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do I have a report?
Austin, just real quick, because just to budget our time. So we're going to end at the top of the hour. We got about 14 minutes. So with some of these, we may have to
hustle.
We have to hustle a little bit.
Yeah. So, Jim, there are, I'm pretty sure in each of the lessons, when I talk about a strategy report, I'm pretty sure I actually share the sections of my reports. I typically don't share the reports themselves simply because of confidentiality stuff with clients.
Sure.
But I'm always happy to say, here were the section headings, and I essentially just flow in content from those. But
and week two or session two, we have quite a few in there, and there's one from me as well in a Word document format that's very generic that will work for a lot of the different flavors.
And
okay,
but right. if you kind of get to week two, week three, and you still feel stuck, please reach out.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I will come back to Jim's next question, Patricia. I was thinking about starting to get the word out by making the offer to my email list. Is that cool, or do you prefer to do it one-on-one? So Patricia, if you're using an email service provider, what I typically do is like I use ConvertKit. And so what I would do is add a tag, and I would have a write-up in a Google Doc for the purpose of anyone who's like, oh, cool, I'm interested in checking out her offer. They click on the link. If they don't then get in touch, ConvertKit will tell you everyone who clicked on the link, and then I would follow up with them one by one. So I would do an email newsletter or just like, yeah, a broadcast email essentially to everyone, and then follow up with anyone who clicks the link individually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will add something else to it. Just this is kind of assumed in your question, Patricia, but it works much better when you have an offer, when you have a juicy Absolutely. Offer, as yeah. opposed to I'm starting to offer strategy, right? So that's why we're giving you the whole juicy offer thing, because you need something tangible.
Right.
I would also add, if you look at my emails, my newsletters, I have mm-hmm. what's called a super signature at the bottom, which yes. is, by the way, whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help yeah. you. That should be one of them.
Yes. And so are you saying that the email isn't the offer? The email is an introduction, and then the offer is a link in the email?
Just say, and if you want to check out my strategy offer, go here.
Okay.
They hop over. I always use a Google Doc because it's like effortless to set up. And I've never had anyone say, oh, how unprofessional that you sent me to a Google Doc, you know? But I, like Ed, I have a super signature. And I also in ConvertKit have rules set up so that anyone who ever clicks on any reference to strategy ever in any of my emails gets automatically added to a segment. And a month when I just sort of need to fill out my calendar because I haven't quite hit my income target yet, that's when, great, I'm hopping over to ConvertKit and I'll just, you know, you could send out another like, hey, I have two openings for this every single month.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I have ConvertKit, but I just started, so I don't know all of the nuances, but okay.
Yeah. And to be clear, Patricia, so one announcement, kind of a broadcast, hey, I have this, but then in your regular, like if you do a newsletter once a month, then that's when you could do the super signature. And like Austin suggested, there could be a third stream where you send a follow-up email to those you've tagged, your system is tagged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Perfect. And thank you.
One other little nuance, especially as you get started, you could also, when you're following up with people who ConvertKit is telling you clicked on the link and visited the doc, ask them for feedback. Hey, what did you think about that strategy offer? Because they will probably, again, give you the language that you should have been using to sell to them.
Right.
Oh, I was interested, but what I actually need is X, Y, and Z. You're like, great. Let me go create a second Google Doc. And then before I respond to your email, I'm like, well, I actually have a different strategy offer specifically for you. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank
you. You are welcome. Great question. David, I'd second Jim's question about free 20 to 30 minute consultation for new prospects. Do we stop doing that? Absolutely not. I always, as quickly as possible with new prospects, new potential clients, try to get FaceTime with them as soon as I can to make an emotional connection. Like, I want them to like me. I want them to recognize I have a personality and a sense of humor and a plant. Look, birds of paradise right there. It's a new plant. I like my plant. Anyway, I never skip the discovery call. And so it's only at the end of the discovery call, when they might have spent 20 minutes talking in circles and I'm still not sure what the project is, that might be when I'm like, well, hey, I've got an idea. Let me email you some thoughts. And they're like, sounds great. You know? Okay. So Jim, awesome. He's like, hey, if anyone wants to chat about progress or stories outside of the coaching session, Ed and I would highly encourage that. You know, you all might as well create a little mastermind group temporarily if you can. Support each other in this. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. I'm going to scroll back up to Marina's earlier question. So she said, in the juicy offer framework, we need to include proof, which could take the form of a testimonial. Is it okay to include testimonials that are somewhat related? For example, I have a testimonial that praises the outcomes of the strategy work, but doesn't praise it directly. Is that still okay? Yes. Especially if you're early on in selling strategy, you may not have testimonials that speak directly to a strategy engagement. But if it's like, hey, Marina is just always terrific to work with, or I just love the way Patricia thinks, or, you know, Jim is just so good at keeping us on track and helping us focus on benchmarking and using, making data-driven decisions, right? It's just a vote of confidence in your professionalism and your value, right? Okay. Second part of Marina's question, in what formats do you solicit testimonials? What questions do you ask? Which questions get the best response for your proof needed to sell more? So I have stopped asking clients to write testimonials. Instead, I ask them if they'd be willing to provide feedback. And while I'm talking, I'm just going to log into Typeform and I'm going to get you. I don't think I share this in any of the sessions with you all, but I would love for you to have it. So the funny thing about testimonials is that everyone hates writing them. I mean, raise your hand if you actually like writing someone a testimonial, and don't raise your hand because then we'll all know you're super weird. Ed made me raise my hand. Wait a second. But anyway, so clients are normally willing, but they're not excited about writing them for us. And so again, to help short circuit this, I'm like, oh, let me just ask you for feedback. Would you spend 5 minutes answering some questions for me and giving me feedback, right? So I think this is the right one. So you all can open this link and you'll see the questions that I ask. So I don't ask for testimonials. I ask for feedback. Then I'm like, hey, would you mind sharing a few kind words about our project together, right? What's your name? You know, and then I'm like, hey, well, it looks like it's not gonna, you all can spam me, or I can get you these questions in another form. Anyway, I ask questions, they give me responses. Unbeknownst to them, I'm then going to stitch together their responses into the testimonial. And then once I have that testimonial, I'm like, hey, thanks for taking the time to answer these questions. I actually used your answers to write a testimonial. Is it okay with you if I use it? I've never had anyone say no. They're always like, yes, absolutely. Right. And then once they give me the yes, then I will share my Google Maps link, like my local business review thing. And I'm like, and also, would you copy and paste this and just help me out with my Google reviews? And again, I've never had anyone say no. So stopped asking for testimonials, started asking for feedback, sending a questionnaire, writing the testimonials myself. That means I usually get testimonials in 2 to 3 days instead of having to like follow up multiple times. Why? No one likes writing them. Even if they love you, they don't want to write you a testimonial.
Well, Austin, here's another one that it takes a little bit of reprogramming. I encourage everyone to get used to every time you get praise, don't just say thank you. Say thank you. It means a lot to hear that. Would you mind if I use your comment below, if it was in an email or if it was verbal, yes, if I drafted that and added that to my testimonials file? I would really mean a lot. I never get enough.
Yes.
So but that requires reprogram, because we're not conditioned, right? To, in fact, we're embarrassed when we get praise, many of us. So you need to get over that and just thank them and ask if you can use it. That's going to be, for me, it's been the most common way that I get them, because those happen.
Mm-hmm. And they come in organically, and typically the language is a much fresher, right? Wow, this is everything we wanted and so much more. Thank you, Ed, right? And you're like, hey, can we use that as a testimonial? Or you can just hire Patricia, apparently. Right?
Yeah, thanks for that video. And your questions there, Austin, that's what's in the form, what you just posted in the chat.
That's what's in the form. I realized I share this form all the time. I'm like, please do this. You'll get more testimonials. You'll get them faster. And ultimately, they'll be a little bit better written if you're the one kind of stitching it all. You are the writer, after all. I think we've covered all the questions. Did we miss any?
I think we're
Jim
good.
Had a second question, but we answered that. Yeah. Okay, in 2 minutes, I'd love for each person, because we have a smaller group, to say what has been most helpful so far. Has your mind changed about anything?
Yeah, I think mindset was the biggest one for me. I mean, just that discussion you and Ed had earlier, because it's true. I get so focused on one part of the project when asking those deeper questions, I think would open a lot more opportunities.
It's a different form of listening. Mm-hmm. Jane, go for it.
There we are. So for me, I realize I'm already doing this, but I'm giving it away. And I've had people take the strategy, never hire, mm-hmm. you know. And so the idea that I can actually charge for this, that it's not like part of the hire me sales funnel thing, roadmap, but it's actually something that I can charge for, that is a huge paradigm shift for me.
It's a great sort of, it's a good to have a strategy or brainstorming offer in your back pocket for idea vacuum clients. They like sort of hook up to you and they're like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? Emails, text messages, phone calls, sucking your ideas out. And you're like, tell you what, how about you actually pay me for this? All right. Anyone else ready to share? We've got 0 seconds left. One more person, Jim, go.
Yeah, I think mindset, I have to agree with David. I've been doing some of this all along, and sometimes it's just been giving information away. And I think, I don't know whether it was in session one or session two, but just kind of reminding us that you've been doing some of that, and there's something that you bring to the table. Even if you're, I don't know, if you just do white papers or you just do web copy, there's a way to kind of think of it in a different way that you could offer strategy, because you are an expert, you know, having mm-hmm. written all this, you know, I'm just using that tiny little specialty or niche, but mm-hmm. you know, it seems like I and everybody else has that ability to sell or think up and sell a strategy around that.
And it's only a matter of time before you do it. And then you raise the price, and then you raise the price again. And then you're like, oh, wait, like, then my business was 50-50 split between strategy and writing. And now it's like 90% strategy and 10% writing. And I'm like, it's a whole lot easier to make the income I want in the hours I have available in the week.
Yep.
But anyway, that's it for this week. Ed, any closing thoughts?
No, I think we're good. Great questions, guys. So keep it coming. Write your questions down as you go through the material. And we'll see you same place, same bat channel next week.
All righty. Good to see all of your faces. See you soon.
Thank you.